Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
Brought to you by Riley Sports Shop in Hooksett, where they're open every day and some very convenient hours for you. Riley'sGuns.com. Check them out online and here on Bulldog Live.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
1-866-823-1077 is our phone number right here on Bulldog Live with attorney Penny Dean joining us now for Second Amendment Tuesdays. Good morning, Penny.
Good morning.
Oh, boy. Always a busy week in any time we talk about firearms issues.
But you know what? I remember that I have to tell everyone something first. Fortunately, I'm well-armed and can defend myself. I had to fight my way out of Riley's.
What do you mean?
Well, here's what happened. Ralph, bless his soul. You know, of course, I'm always yelling about pink. And I said to him, where are the pink shirts? We need pink shirts. So he gets these pink shirts made, and he saves them in a bag for me. Now, he hasn't put them up for sale in the regular store yet. I don't know why yet. And so I said, well, I'll stop by and pick them up. So he had a sack for me. I opened the sack, and I want to make sure that it's the right thing, the right size. You know what I mean? Before I walk out the door of the sack, in case someone, you know, switch junk, right?
Sure.
And I hold up this beautiful pink, and I'm talking nice pink, bright pink, shirts with big old Target on the back, say, Riley's. There was a crowd around me. Four employees wanted to buy it. All the people, they go, well, we'll give you more money for them. I go, these are my shirts. I go, I don't know if they're for sale. They're my shirts. I had to fight my way to the door. So I don't know if he's put them in there. Anybody's listening?
Well, maybe he should. I didn't see them on Friday night when I was there. And I want to give a big shout out to John E. At Riley's, because he helped me out very, very immensely. It was a very good deal. And I'll tell you what, and then we got talking about you and the whole thing. But no, I didn't see any pink shirts there. But I'll tell you what, they should sell them, because when I was there, there were more women in the store than there were men customers.
Well, not only that, all these guys wanted to buy them for their wives and girlfriends for Christmas. So the funny thing was, They go, where'd you get them? I go, I don't know. Ralph got them for me, and nobody's taken my shirts. So I clutch my bag, and I fight my way through the door. I swear it was hand-to-hand combat, you know. And fortunately, me and my shirts arrived home. But I just wanted to say that. And then today, I have to tell you, today to me is a sad day. The actual sad day was December 14th. And it's the day that a New Hampshire Supreme Court decision came down, and it's State v. Adam Mentis. And it's a case that came out of Rockingham County. And I think every firearm owner should read this case very carefully for several reasons. They need to learn the lessons that can be brought from this case. And the lessons, particularly, average people, average working people, don't have $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 laying around. Okay?
Amen to that.
Yeah, well, they don't. You know what I mean? And so when these type of cases happen, I want to talk to people about the practical reality of how they go down. Because everyone thinks, okay, yeah, you do this, this, and this. And my answer is, have you ever actually done this, this, and this? Because it's easier said than done. And in this particular case, it arose out of some facts that happened on June 26, 2008. And Mr. Mentis was with his friend. And they went to State Line Ammo in Plastow. They bought a Lorsen 380. Now, a lot of people, I don't know if you're familiar with Lorsens, they would not be my firearm of choice. I think they're poorly made. But here's the bottom line.
But it's a tiny gun that would be easily concealed.
It's a tiny gun easily concealed. But the other thing is, they're $100 versus $500 or $600. And think about some poor person who works at a job that doesn't pay that much money.
Mm.
They want a firearm for self-defense, and they can't afford, let's say, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. So they buy something they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people you're better off to look for a cheaper revolver. But, you know, some people new to handguns don't know all these things.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I had a Lorsen 22 blow apart in the hands of John Evans, a friend of mine and fellow attorney. Blow to pieces. And luckily, he wasn't hurt. I called Lorsen and they gave me a new gun. But that convinced me. This is a gun to show people what I wouldn't personally buy. You know, okay. I wouldn't buy it and carry. But this person is probably new to firearms. They don't know. And they may not have a lot of money. The fact that the public defender's office defended them tell me they're a person of limited means. So they returned to Mr. Karen's house, which is one of the other people there, where another person joined them. And later, this person took the Lorsen to his house to show his brother, you know, wanted to say, hey, here's my new gun.
Yeah.
Okay. So at this point, they decide they want to go to a sand pit in Hampstead to fire the Lorsen. And again, a lot of people shoot at sand pits and local things where even the police shoot. Because again, like I'm a member of two private clubs, but I can tell you when I was in law school, I was a member of one club. And I used to pay the dues the day it was due because I was so poor, I was lucky I could pay it. You know, because when you're in law school, you're saving every penny you can, right?
Sure.
And so what if this guy's a poor working person and maybe he can't afford club membership somewhere? Okay, so they go in the place in Hampstead, and I'm sure there's no allegations that it was unsafe at this particular pit or anything like that. One person agreed to drive. Now, here's the important part. Before they left, the defendant put a full clip of ammunition in the Lorsen and took additional ammunition with him, put the Lorsen in his left pocket. To me, there's nothing wrong with that, presuming he has a license to carry. I always carry loaded guns. Why would you carry an unloaded gun? You
right.
Know? Uh-huh. So anyway, sometime later after they're in the car, this person reached into his pocket, retrieved the Lorsen, probably like me with a new piece of jewelry or toy, you're still or other tool, you're still looking at it and noticing all the pieces. As he held the gun in his right hand, it fired. The bullet traveled through the back of the driver's seat and punctured an individual's left lung.
Ooh.
They slammed the car into park and got out. And they helped this person into a house where they collapsed on the floor. They called 911, ambulance arrived, and this person, this was a female, she died.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a very, very awful thing. And this accident teaches us several things, some things which are very disappointing to me about the New Hampshire Supreme Court. After the shooting, the police questioned the defendant. Now, in cases like that, that defendant should not have answered questions. Because what happens is he needs 24 hours to decompress because of that horrible situation. He probably doesn't know himself what happened. It's a shocking event. He needs to think it through and process it. Okay, he told them that after he sat down in the car, he wanted to put the gun under his seat. So he took the gun out of his left pocket, transferred it to his right hand, and when he was bending down to place it on the floor, it fired. Now, this is what he said one time, and here's what I've learned. People will tell you that the moon is made of green cheese at that point because they just don't know, and they want to fill in the blanks in their mind. Mm-hmm. He also said that his finger hit the trigger, that his finger was on the trigger or in the trigger guard area. So there's three different stories, which to me means he really doesn't know what happened, okay?
Right.
And that's normal in a shocking event, that he did not know whether there was a round in the chamber when the gun fired. At trial, he said his finger was not in the trigger guard area. He does not put his finger on the trigger. However, he also testified, I might have hit the trigger. Now, hitting the trigger, any of those who's handled firearms knows when you're moving your fingers about, depending on the position, it's possible to hit the trigger,
mm-hmm.
okay, without putting your finger on it and firing the trigger. Okay, I might have hit the slide, but I did not pull the trigger. This is what he later testified to. Now, here's the problem. This poor gentleman obviously didn't have enough funds to hire a private attorney. And therefore...
Right, because you mentioned public defender early on, so there
absolutely.
You go.
Absolutely. So the public defender was appointed to represent him. And I always tell people a couple, three things about the public defender. Like everything, they have some very good attorneys and bad attorneys. There's good and bad and everything. There's some very dedicated, some not... You know, it's like the normal thing of private practice of human beings. So a public defender, some of the best and finest trial attorneys choose to do that type of service. So just because you're assigned a public defender doesn't mean you have a bad lawyer, and I tell people that all the time. There's some very fine lawyers there. But here's what's more important. Number one, the court determines based on your financial affidavit if you're entitled to a public defender. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is. Second, the court determines how much you're going to pay back. People think, well, I'll just get a free lawyer. That isn't quite how it works. even once you're assigned a lawyer, you have to pay a certain percentage. And again, the court makes that determination based on how much you make. Okay, there's court administrative agency, cost containment. But more importantly, that I tell people, especially in self-defense cases, okay, is that you're going to need a lot of experts. In my opinion, I usually rely on 2 to 3 experts. Those experts, even though some of them are very fair to firearm owners, do not work for free and they don't work cheap. Just it doesn't work that way. You can't get the best surgeon for $5. So prior to trial in cases like this, what happens when you have a public defender, the public defender has to go to court and ask for what's called fees for services. They have to ask for fees for outside experts. So they requested $3,000 to hire a firearms expert. I've never hired a $3,000 firearms expert in my life. Okay.
All the Let me guess. It was more.
they're all more.
Okay.
They're all more. Because it's kind of like I tell people, well, you want a Cadillac and you want it for $10,000 new?
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. So anyway, the public defender went to the court and said, gee, you know, we're working for this guy for free. He doesn't have any money. We need a firearms expert. Here's why we need one, court, and we'd like $3,000. Well, the court said, no, times are tough. There's not much money in the budget. We're going to give you $750. Well, of course, this firearms expert says, I'm not working for $750. You know, not happening. And this gentleman truly needs, in this case, a firearms expert. So defense counsel filed a motion for reconsideration. The court said, okay, I'll give you $1,200. $1,200 is not even half of $3,000.
There you go.
Okay, so they're not allowed this expert. They hired someone else, and his attorneys hired a lawyer as an expert who's involved in litigation against gun manufacturers.
Oh.
Now, the court determines who is going to be allowed to be an expert in the courtroom. Okay, in this particular case, the court ruled that Thomas McDermott, who's the lawyer expert that they hired, was not qualified to testify as an expert, and therefore expert testimony wasn't allowed for this defendant. Now, that's really important because in court, there's very strict guidelines for timing. You have to disclose experts to the other side. So when the court disqualified that expert, even if they all of a sudden got a lot of money or had a volunteer expert, no way is the court going to let someone testify at that point because all these timelines have passed. You have to give fair notice to the other side.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this gentleman went into court, went into trial without an expert. Okay, and obviously he lost.
Well, here's another element of the disaster. Yes.
Here's another element of the disaster is he absolutely lost. But let me tell you what's really
No, I mean, the other element of the disaster wasn't that he lost, but that he wasn't allowed to have his expert. You know?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Even the bad expert, I shouldn't say the bad expert, I don't know this man and I don't know his criteria, but even the expert the court found insufficient and inadequate wasn't allowed to testify. So this man had no expert, okay? No expert. And the bottom line is, that is really, really a problem in these type of cases because a lot of people don't know what they don't know. And jurors, like any other regular person on planet Earth, sometimes need to be educated in a certain arena.
Sure.
And this is an absolute good example of where they needed to be educated. But I think more importantly, in cases like this, some of the language that the Supreme Court used in this opinion is very, very troubling to me.
Well, let me ask you this. What was he eventually found guilty of?
Manslaughter.
Mm. Involuntary, you know, or what?
Let me double check.
Well, while you're checking that, 1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse with Second Amendment Tuesdays and Attorney Penny Dean joining us. This is made possible by Riley Sports Shop and Hooks. That you can reach them at rileysguns.com as well as 485-5000. They're located at 1575 Hooksett Road.
Let me try this again. How about reckless conduct?
Oh, okay.
You know, the bottom line is, in this particular case, and it's funny, sometimes I read an opinion and I'm looking for one thing and kind of ignore the others. I'm looking in this particular case, I think of the things that people can learn, and I tell people when they're handling firearms you really need to be extra careful. I have a friend who says that every firearm that leaves your gun has a lawyer attached to it, or every bullet that leaves your gun has a lawyer attached to it. And the bottom line is, I think that's really something to think about. You know, that's the bottom line in this particular case.
Well, you are responsible for where those bullets land, aren't you?
That's exactly right. You know,
because you can't bring them back. Once they exit the chamber, there's no pulling it back.
Yeah.
There's no redo.
Yeah. That's an incredibly good point. You can't do certain things over. And the bottom line is, in this particular case, is that this particular person, which is like many people on planet Earth, they didn't have the resources to adequately defend this case. And the state, meaning the public defender's office, in my opinion, wasn't given the adequate resources. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is, whether or not this firearm is defective, I don't have an opinion. Okay, I don't know anything about this firearm, but I think it's very reasonable, given his testimony, okay, to have looked at it. But I think more important with this particular case is that you have to look at what can we all take from it, okay? Let me read you a small portion
We'll see if we can do this in about 2 minutes.
Okay. Here, there was ample evidence that the defendant unsafely handled the gun. Now, here's this huge quote that I think is a huge problem. Based on his admitted knowledge of hunter safety rules, he testified that a gun should always be pointed in a safe direction. Here's the important part. That it should be unloaded when transported in a car.
Really?
Yeah. And that all times it should be treated as if it were loaded. Yet he admitted that he did not follow these rules. Now, here is the thing that you have to ask yourself. If the New Hampshire Supreme Court, in theory, is aware of the laws in the state, aware of RSA 159-6, which gives us licenses to carry concealed firearms, why in the world would it put such language in an opinion such as this unless it's really showing us a bias?
Right.
And those are things that people have to think of, because the bottom line is, I've heard people say, well, if I lose at trial, I'll just appeal. And I'm like, wait a minute here.
No. No, you have to get everything right at trial.
That's exactly it, because the standards on appeal are much different than the standards at trial. And people look at these type of things. And the bottom line in this...
To oversimplify it, an appeal is basically looking for technical errors in the trial made by the judge, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And judges have huge amount of discretion in their court, huge amount, to a point that you can't imagine it. And I'm sorry, I should tell you, he was guilty of reckless manslaughter. I kept
reckless
flipping
manslaughter.
The term.
Okay.
Reckless manslaughter is what he was found guilty of, because he had mishandled the gun. That was their reasoning behind that. But I think people say, well, I'd never do this or I'd never do that. And my answer is the principles that are found in this case, because that's what courts look at in the future, is what's the language in this case? What are the principles? And I can tell you that judges, words mean things. When it comes to firearms, there are some judges who are clearly biased against firearms, and their words come through. I had a judge where I said, Judge, there is no permit in this state. Here's the language. It's a pistol or revolver license. Here's the statute. Here's whatever. He continued deliberately to call it a permit.
Huh.
And that's telling me, you know, the psychologists can talk about all sorts of language about the bias, because permit connotes permission, not a right, but something that the king grants you permission.
Right.
And I don't think that's what the law states or the way it is in New Hampshire. But I think this case, although people always say, well, you know, I wouldn't do this or wouldn't do that, this is written from the perspective of the court, and their language and the things they say that are and aren't acceptable tell you how that they are telling the story. Because there's always two sides to every story.
That is. Well, Penny, I have to go because we are just simply out of time. I will post this opinion on the Second Amendment Tuesdays page at briantilton.com on the Supreme Court decision from last week. But how do people get in touch with you?
230-9999.
All right. Very good. Well, Penny at pennydean.com. And also thank you to Riley Sports Shop, 1575 Hooksett Road in Hooksett. They're open 7 days a week, Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 5, Thursday and Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday, 9 to 5, and Sunday, 10 to 5. I guess they sell gift certificates, too, don't they?
They do.
Oh, yes.
Person can always have a gift certificate, you know?
Give a great gift. And one more thing before I go. I was looking at some ammunition for a particular firearm, and I'll tell you what, they had it cheaper there than at the big box store. So, there.
Yeah, Ralph keeps up on those things, actually. He's pretty good about that. But mainly, I want all you women to go in there, and we're going to start a petition. Sell those pink shirts.
All right. Very good. Take care, Penny.